Hi, this is Chico Matsusaka, and welcome to Mission Arts. I'm here today speaking with Tita Vonkoff, president and co-founder of Modern Marimba, which is, on one level, a music organization that is dedicated to highlighting or bringing this mellow mallet instrument to a broader audience through performance, education, and commissioning new projects and works. But that's just one facet of Modern Marimba. The WEDU PBS Greater Sarasota video short on Modern Marimba, which we will put up a link to on our website, gives a snapshot of the deeper mission of your organization, which is the pursuit of an equitable musical ecosystem by focusing, amplifying, and reclaiming the musical voices that have been unheard throughout Western history. So, Tita, how did you end up on this particular path with Modern Marimba?
That's a great question. And when you emailed me, I was like, oh, okay, I need to think about this. And what I kept coming back to is the fact that I deeply feel that this was meant to happen. This was maybe me. This is me kind of unfolding as I am and being myself. I'm on this path of life and this is a part of it. And I don't know necessarily where that came from, but it is here. So I follow those instincts.
When you decided that you wanted to create this organization, did it start out being one thing, and then as time has gone on, has it evolved?
Absolutely. Yeah. I started the Modern Marimba in late 2019, So just before the pandemic.
Right.
It started with doing house concerts, doing, you know, percussion ensemble kind of concerts at, you know, local churches and stuff around Sarasota, and just feeling very affirmed by them. Because as an orchestral percussionist, I don't have a chance to do chamber music.
Right.
So it felt so good
to play
chamber music. And well, you know, why don't I just see what this road of becoming a nonprofit is like and what that all entails. And so creating a mission around that, it wasn't like I was like, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to solve the world's problems. It was kind of like, let me just like take one step down this path and just see what's happening. So obviously our mission statement has changed, you know, because of the pandemic and just the world changing so quickly. It constantly is evolving, and I'm getting used to being comfortable with that.
Just it not being fixed as to, you know, you put it well, because when I started my nonprofit, I did have this idea that I needed to solve the world's problems, and it just doesn't work that way.
No.
And I like the fact that we have the ability to sort of be flexible and say, okay, what can I do in this sphere?
I think when the pandemic happened in 2020, a lot of us spent a lot of time doing some inside work.
Right.
And from that inside work, it really helped me like connect with my culture and connect with my upbringing, what was accessible to me as a Lao American and what was not accessible to me, and the kind of affirmations that were along the way or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up in St. Pete.
Yeah.
I studied with members of the Florida Orchestra from an early age for percussion, at least,
mm-hmm.
you know, 10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great mentors, and all of them are still alive and they're still playing in TFL. And I love that orchestra.
Yeah.
It's like my home orchestra.
Yeah.
And I love the vibe of the musicians. And so going down the musical path was very natural, because I felt so supported through middle school, high school, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, going through college, trying to get a job and trying to make sense of, like, what does it mean to freelance, and just what can I put out there? Where am I going to be accepted? And being kind of close to home here in Sarasota, like, but far away enough so that my mom doesn't like pop in and say hi. I just like I needed that space, especially in my 20s. And just discovering, like, you know, where am I going on this musical path that has been a part of my life since forever, to me. And even before, like, my formal study, my mom owned an Asian restaurant, and she bought a keyboard for my brother and me and just put it back there. We would play around with it, and then she would hire these delivery drivers who were kids who were students at USF.
Right.
And we ended up hanging out with them.
Yeah.
You know, and so of course that led to learning about music and all kinds of really, really fun avenues that we explored.
Right.
short and sweet my musical journey.
What I love about it, it's unusual for a typical conservatory
trained
musician. And that's, it was much more, how do you describe it? It was a much more intimate introduction, whereas most of us string players are usually dragged to our first lesson.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's refreshing to hear that.
I mean, part of maybe why that is, you know, my parents could not afford lessons.
Right.
So my teachers in the Florida Orchestra gave lessons for free, or my mom would cook like Lao food for them. And that's how we would exchange these lessons. And then, you know, just being around them through youth orchestra, sneaking backstage before concerts and all that kind of stuff. I hesitate to say this, but it really did feel like being a part of a family, a musical family.
That's one of the things that I love about this kit that you offer to students or potential students that are interested in learning. I think there's sort of a power in ownership when you say, it's not just, I'm going to give you free lessons. It's just like, here's a book and here's some mallets and just see where you go with that. Because I know for myself, when I'm trying to learn something new, I don't go for the introductory book and then add things. I go for the person that's like, here's my kit, here's some yarn, here's needles, you know, things like that.
Yeah, there's something about sharing community with someone who's doing whatever you're doing, and they're like gifting you this. There's something special about that, like, this person gave me this and now I'm going to play with it on my own time.
It means something more.
Absolutely. So with Modern Marimba, like, obviously we wanted to offer that, especially during the pandemic when, like, I found out kids were still sharing mallets and like this. I was like, wow, like, that's okay, you know, pre-pandemic, because it's good to share things.
Right.
And percussionists love to, we end up sharing things like, hey, use my mallets, it's fine. But during the pandemic, I was like, wow, this is not cool. And you can see the inequities start to pop up in music education. So I reached out to neighbors and friends and said, hey, can you sponsor these, you know, gift bags? We want to mail them to schools, or if students contact us, you know, I'd love to send them home with a stick bag, because it's a barrier.
Right.
For music education, especially with percussion, we have so many instruments to learn.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just one of the things that I love about what you do, is that you're not just about, we want to be accessible. You actually go to places, and it's not, if a string quartet decides they're going to go on the road, they go on the road. But when a percussion ensemble goes on the road,
it's a nightmare in terms of logistics.
Yes.
And it's been a challenge that I have had to be very flexible.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, packing up a cello to go somewhere can, you know, in my opinion, be a pain in the butt. But when I think about what you have to load up and unload and then assemble, basically put back together what you had taken apart in order to fit it into your car or your truck.
And people will see this in the WEDU documentary. Yeah. They wanted to film us moving gear. And I was like, wow, this is the first time anyone has ever said that. Are you sure you want to do this?
Well, I think it's great practical advice, if you want to call it that, for small organizations to see the logistics that you describe. And as I know for myself, there was a huge learning curve in trying to do what I did during the pandemic with offering live virtual sessions on Zoom. All it takes is one missing adapter to derail a well-planned event, and you can't anticipate everything, and you can only surrender and learn.
Yes, exactly. And you just make the note for next time. So I've learned things along the way of, like, how to make marimba accessible, because it is such a huge instrument, especially like the 5-octave ones, the ones we usually see in universities and colleges and orchestras. So I've had to, like, look for certain things. Like, I just found a xylophone that's, you know, maybe 3 octaves, has a handle, the legs fold up, I can throw it into my car, and, you know, the kids can, you know, go to town on it and just explore. So looking for those kinds of things has really changed my perspective on what accessibility means.
What's inspiring to see about Modern Marimba is that you and your co-founder, Steph Davis, you envision this organization as being primarily about building a community and a safe space to create, perform, and teach. And that's something so unique, valuable, and needed in this day and age. And I don't mean to bite the hand that feeds us, but I feel like the performing institutions that we both come from, that aspect of safe space and particularly creativity and innovation, they tend to lose out in the battle for this fiscal solvency. I'm interested in how you see Modern Marimba navigating through this.
I mean, it comes from, I don't see myself in the things that I do necessarily, or people like me being successful in the things that I do. So I guess I have to create it myself. And you understand that, I know. And so, you know, understanding my identity and seeing that, and like building solidarity with Steph Davis, our co-founder,
right,
and people in our community. You introduced me to Valerie Bouchon,
right. Right.
And learning from the community and saying, wow, this is the structures of arts as an institution could be done differently.
Right.
It could be more, you know, worker owned. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And really more of like a co-op kind of thing. And how do we do that while having to navigate these space, like these paths of paperwork that were not built for that?
Exactly.
And how do you resist falling into that trap? And I think being a creative person and living in 2022, where so many of us musicians grew up saying, oh, you just play the gig, get paid, and keep doing what you're doing. Where more of us are comfortable wearing different hats. And that obviously our creative selves bleed into the way we administer things for better or for worse.
Some of us, it's worse.
That's why we have help, you know?
Yes.
And yes. I think being more in touch with our humanity, whether we're an accountant, yeah, you know, or an arts administrator or a musician, I think can really help us navigate these spaces.
Yeah.
And if we all have the understanding that the way that our society is structured at the moment doesn't really work, but we are going to do the best we can because we can't change, you know, the
exactly
world.
We can't change the world. I sort of see what I do as being very macro. If I can make a connection with the one person and sort of hear their story and understand why they may have this totally opposing view that I have, and just not necessarily agreeing, but just saying, okay, I get that.
I understand you.
I understand you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, yeah,
that's revolution in itself.
Yeah.
Because that, I think the way tech is going is it kind of keeps us siloed.
Yeah.
So the more we come together, yeah, you know, well, community.
I think that's one of the reasons why it's important to keep virtual or social media events as a regular part of the work we do.
Yes, absolutely. That's been a big part of what we do. And even recently, we did a live stream concert for, yeah, Hurricane Ian, just because I mean, gathering in a space so close to the aftermath, I did not see that as like really respectful to be on the roads, to go to a concert to help. I mean, I just felt weird about it. So I was like, you know what? Well, the best thing would be to do is, because, you know, there are no lights, that people don't have electricity. Maybe they have Wi-Fi, maybe they don't, but at least we can offer something. And it was amazing to see the amount of Florida artists who sent in recordings to be included.
Yeah.
And then local artists too, because I opened it up to,
yeah,
not just, you know, marimba and vibraphone and mallet players,
yeah,
but to any artists. It gave me a lot of hope. And in that moment, as I was putting the videos together, I was like, oh, it is so healing just to like chill, sit down, and listen. And we both know as musicians that something happens in the spaces that we create where we can feel safe, we can just relax and let the music work on us.
In the WEDU special, Steph talks about there being a kind of creative friction between their classical training and their emerging expressive voice. Do you find that to be a friction as well? Or what is it for you?
It's a tool like anything. It's a tool. And it's like how we use it, how any artist uses a form,
mm-hmm,
for expression and communication.
Yeah.
So for me, the fact is that like that form has been so primary to my life. And it's almost difficult for me to imagine anything creating in any other way, any other traditions and paths around that. And then also like, why is that the main thing that all the other ways of learning, even in self-knowledge, why is that considered secondary or measured against the Western tradition? And it's just a continuous thing that I ask myself mm-hmm. and remind myself, because it's so easy, because we live in where we live and it affects us. So for me, the practice has been, how do I choose alternate paths in right. the way of learning? I got a crash course in that this summer. I went, there's a Lao music camp for kids and adults through the Lao Heritage Foundation. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about this until I started following all these like Lao advocacy groups and Asian American advocacy mm-hmm. groups on Instagram. So basically they have musicians come to the States from Laos and Asian American and Lao Americans who live here. They meet at a community center, a Lao community center, like a temple or just, you know, a regular community center. And kids come all day, just like music camp, mm-hmm. and they learn, but they learn through the oral tradition.
Right.
And then it's also a community building where we eat together, we make food together, we learn things about the Lao tradition, because now we have an entire generation of like mixed race Lao kids, and then just like very Americanized Lao kids, whereas I'm first generation. So we have second generation, third generation kids already. So it was really great. I was like, oh my God, I needed this since I was like a kid. I've been missing out. And of course, like I was the one adult student, you know.
Oh, come on. I think that's a great idea. That idea, the community sense of that, you know, you're learning in community and just yes. cooking together and
learning from other kids. Like I was yeah. learning from musicians who were 11 and 13, I yeah. think, and they yeah. were teaching me the oral tradition, and it was like, wow. They also have, and I brought it for you to see uh-huh. later, just the way that they write things, and uh-huh. just like, kind of like the written word, where classical musicians, we like, oh, you have to follow. It's like, that is for students.
Right.
There is these other layers, you know, of doing that. And then also like building chamber music together is also community based.
Right.
And obviously we can't live like that 24/7.
Like, it would be nice if we could.
It was nice for that week that I was yeah, doing that. Yeah. So peeling off the layers of centering my Western education and seeing other types of things was very healing. And it being my own culture was very affirming. So I think part of what is hard for me sometimes is balancing those two or three forms of knowledge and transition between the two or combine the two and also just to go with it.
For my parents, they really wanted their kids to be assimilated American because of their experience with World War II and just sort of their experience. You know, a lot of Japanese were not comfortable with the nationalism and sort of the belief in the empire. And so, especially when I was born, I was the last of five. English was the primary language and I didn't learn any Japanese. And I know particularly with my mother, she didn't want to talk about it, and she didn't want to teach me any Japanese. And anytime I got interested in anything Japanese, she's just like, why do you want to learn about that? You know, you're not Japanese. My mother would not want to teach me. She would say, you know, if you're really curious about it, when you go to college, you can learn about all that stuff. But she didn't want to. But were your parents like that or your mom?
Yes, we have a lot in common. It's amazing. This is going to turn into like an Asian American therapy podcast, basically. Yes. Assimilation, number one. Yeah. English, all the way. I mean, yeah. like words here and there, like commands, basically, like go take a shower, up not, like, you know, come eat. Like, but other than that, it was like strictly English. And she wanted us to pass. And like, I mean, visually, I don't, but culturally, I do. Mm-hmm. And since the pandemic, taking time to think about that. And I, after going to this Lao music camp, learning the language and it just kind of it all coming back to me. And it's somewhere deep in there in my, you know, the has ability she, to speak.
Has she softened a little bit on that stance?
No. Okay. It's very, we won't get into that, but it's complicated.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, it is. I think my mother, for her, there were so many bad memories associated. But yes. if I did something, like one time I made her a type of Japanese sweet. And that she got excited about because she had a good memory associated with that. And then she took over and she says, no, that's not how you do it. You do it this way. And I was just like,
this is like to a T.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
So we have that experience that we carry with us. right before the pandemic, like December 2019, my partner, my mom, and my aunt, who lives in Switzerland, we all went to Laos together. Yeah. And I definitely, I couldn't even pass as Lao. Like, they're like, you're American or some kind of what, you're Western.
Yes.
Like, they can tell immediately. So they wouldn't even bother speaking Lao to me, to my face. Yeah. It's like, and it's like, okay, great. So, like, what I bring, those experiences that I've had as an adult, what I, when I bring that into the Mana Marimba's mission, I definitely check myself and say, am I just doing this to say, check mark, I played a piece by a Black composer, a Guatemalan composer, blah, blah, blah. Am I using their cultural experiences to say, like, look at me and what I'm doing for the community or anything? Or am I building community with people in our community who may, like, you know, want to connect with that kind of music? Like, you know, like, it's a complicated questioning, constantly questioning kind of process, which looking to community with, like, the queer members of our community and like, embracing that process of questioning your gender identity, blah, blah, blah. Like, that, bringing that to the process of being an artist has been really healing for me, too. It's like, we really need to listen and advocate and allow people from marginalized communities to do their thing, because in order to survive, we've all had to do very unconventional things. And in order to survive moving forward, we all have to move not on the traditional path, the traditional Western paths. So I'm trying to learn from them and myself, and trying to use that as I put concerts together. And even, like, do I have a concert program where I'm like, I'm doing this concert on this day and this time? It's very Western.
Yeah. Breaking out of that mold is really hard.
It's hard. And you're constantly questioning yourself because you're doing something different, and, like, not, and people have these expectations, and I'm trying to be like, whoa, chill.
Well, yeah, it's almost like we were talking earlier about, you know, a certain element getting lost, you know, an essential element.
Yes.
Yeah.
So lost. Whatever that may be, the impulse of, you know, responding to a traumatic event like the hurricane, or like the pieces that move me during the time and space will appear, and you can put things together. And it takes a lot of faith.
I know. That's a tough one. It's just trust.
And it's like, oh, when is this thing coming? Because, like, it's been months.
Or having faith in yourself, too, in your vision. Because it's so easy to talk yourself out of something because you start questioning your own intentions.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
And it's like, oh.
And that's when I turn to books and, like, you know, inspirational, you know, YouTube videos, or my, you know, my friends and, you know, us sitting down here like this.
Well, that's part of the reason why Back to the Beat is kind of taking this road into shared stories, because I think that's what's kept me going through the pandemic, is just hearing other people's stories and even their cultural stories, like we're sharing right now. It's like there is so much to learn from each other, and knowing that you're not alone in this experience.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's been imperative to my mental health.
Well, tell me some of the books you're reading right now that have helped you.
Well, Pauline Oliveros, her selected writings. Right. I have gone through that, and you know, I really just open up a page and go for it. That has been really great. It's not necessarily books that I'm reading right now. It's more like podcasts, like your podcast, YouTube videos, for sure.
Cross our fingers.
I always really turn to Bell Hooks and Angela Davis as inspirations for me. Lately, it's been interviews on YouTube, because I'm commuting to St. Pete a lot for to play in orchestras and operas and everything.
Right.
So that's kind of like what I turn to. So reading their books, and I can always open a book, their books, and just start reading, even if it's like a page. Sitting down and reading, there's a collection of short stories by Lao authors, and I love those stories because it really gets to the intimacy of what it's like to be Lao American in the States, and just like little snippets of how these Lao American writers see life. Mm-hmm. And it's really about like objects that exist in our lives through, yeah. and why we have memories around them, and the things, the thoughts that we project on a flower pot, you right. know, that has been throughout our lives. Because I love meditation, and so using an object to see what kind of thoughts fill my head and all yeah. that kind of stuff, and yeah. observe them has been yeah. really healing.
Has meditation been a recent pandemic addition, or has it always kind of been sort of floating around you?
It's always been kind of floating around yeah. me. I think from high school, that's when I started meditating, and I've gone through a phase of, you know, doing meditation retreats, meditating with friends, just sitting on my own, meditation as part of my practice of yoga, and then trying to bring that into music. And more of that since the pandemic started, I started meeting these people who do sound baths. And I met a really cool gentleman who's unfortunately moving out of Sarasota to Costa Rica at yeah. the end of the month. But his name is Ed Russell, and he was a prison guard, uh-huh. but then also started learning how to play didgeridoo and getting into, yeah, creating one-hour programs for sound baths. And people yeah. I've gone to a couple of his that he's hosted. People would just come and lay down, be really comfortable. It's like, wow, this is not your typical concert experience. I tried to see it through the lens of an orchestral musician.
Yeah.
But it's cool. Like, you're not sitting in these, you know, 50-year-old seats, you know, and right. they're like squashing them like sardines or like on an airplane. But yeah. like, you have the space to lay down and all kinds of props you can use to be comfortable. And then you close your eyes and just let the music
feel
happen to
the
you.
Vibrations
yeah,
of this
of the sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can make it intellectual. You can also not. And it's obviously up to the listener. But it's also a physical experience because he will put the bowls on your stomach. And I was like, as a percussionist, I was like, okay, here, this is going to get woo-woo. And I was just like, okay, here we go. I was like, wow, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
So I enjoy being open to those kind of experiences.
Yeah. yeah. So tell me about your partnership with the Sarasota Music Conservatory.
Yay, SMC. So we have a room with a marimba in it. And I have bought some really great posters and all kinds of, I've collected books over the years mm-hmm. and then more focused recently on books by, you know, Black, Indigenous, and with marimba coming from the Mexican tradition, right. like books in Spanish and stuff right. like that. So just going through those with students that have come along. And so what I'm hoping is that we can use that as a base because mm-hmm. it's centrally located. I know it is North Sarasota, but it is centrally located in the city.
Yeah.
And any student who's, or any person who's listening to this, like, you know, we have scholarships to teach students. And also thinking about it as like, transportation, like how is the student going to get there? What hours are they open? And thankfully, Lena and Sean over at SMC are really flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the building's open, I think, from like 9 to 9. And it's a nice community there that allows for, you know, the flexibility of living in our time and place.
Well, that's a lot of, you know, I say this to Natalie too, because there are some days where it's just like, I can't even like put an email together. And yet, you guys are like managing all of these things. And it's just like, I don't know how you do it. But just the logistics of that alone, you know, to have to think and the planning that goes into that, you put a lot of thought.
It is, yeah. Well, I will say this because it is overwhelming and it's just so much stuff. I think maybe it's being a percussionist and like my nature. Like
that you're already.
I'm like, I'm all over the place. And my partner says, it's because I'm a Gemini. I am literally all over the place. And he's a Libra, so he's like, you
he's
know, balancing. Yes,
yeah.
the peacemaker there.
Yeah,
it's like kind of how I'm built, I think. And a lot of it, like, as an orchestral percussionist, no shade to my fellow percussionists. We don't do a lot in comparison. Like, we have different battles.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was just playing Tosca
yeah.
in St. Pete, and, you know, there was a lot of time in between. My entrances. So it's like, okay, well, obviously I'm going to sit there and listen to the music. That's a part of it. But, you yeah. know, I can have time for other things.
Yeah.
So I just try to fill my day up with things that are productive. I try. My partner is Mr. Type A as well. So uh-huh. he is very good about like inspiring me. And he had an amazing career in the Boston area mm-hmm. doing a lot of different, mm-hmm. wearing a lot of different hats.
Yeah.
So it's kind of becoming the vibe of our household is ultra productive.
I think that's the problem. I live with two cats, and sort of their idea of productive is
that's also productive. And that's the balancing. That's the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's important for me to have, do the sound bath thing, to improvise, to compose, and to perform and practice. That's that time. It gets easier, though, I will say, to those who are thinking about this, because, like, the paperwork is so, it's like, ugh. But it does get easier. Like, after the first two times I did things like apply to grants through the state of Florida, it was just a pain in the butt. I'm like, I never want to do this again. And then I did it again, and I was like, you know, okay, it is a pain, but it's also like
it's not familiar.
It's familiar. Now I know the ropes.
Right.
So it's like being comfortable with being uncomfortable while you're learning something.
Like filling out your tax forms.
Yes.
Or you know, just even sending in, you know, I'm still at that N99, you know, that card that you just have to mail in. And it's just like, oh my God, this is really scary. You just click that checkbox and then hit send. That's it.
And then something I've realized I'm doing, it's like I have a slew of things on my to-do list. Yeah. And none of them are like artistic. I do them. And then I started timing how long it took. And then I'm like, oh, literally that took 15 minutes. And then in my head, I've been just like, oh, I have to do this. And exactly. It's like, that's that game of just like.
Well, that's, I like you use the word game because that's what it is. It's almost like a video game that you set. I literally now set a timer. I only have an hour to go through, you know, my emails. I only have an hour to do this type of business. You know, this is symphony business. When the timer goes off, that's it.
It's it, yeah.
And I think it is, like you said, how many emails can I complete in this X amount of time?
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And I hope that our society is moving towards like, it is, it's going to be slow. And we're going to have to drag people along, but so that we have more time to make safe spaces for creation and less time doing all of that.
Yes.
That's just inefficiency.
No, I like that idea of creating safe spaces. Mm-hmm. So,
and I see a lot of people because of the pandemic, again, I'm reaching out to people that all over the world that previously had no interest or didn't even know that they existed. And just watching them create their own safe spaces and the challenges that they come across through like Facebook groups. So I'm a part of a couple of different Facebook groups.
Yeah.
One's like percussionists who do what I do, who are, you know, outside of, you know, the status quo.
Yeah.
And then they're like nonprofit arts administrators. Some of them are like deep into the admin and not doing the arts.
Yeah.
A lot of people do both.
Yeah.
And just kind of creating like, you know, support groups and being part of that has been great. So again, like being a millennial who's on their phone a lot, it's not all Instagram and TikTok. There is some like virtual spaces that are accessible to me, created for me, and I feel comfortable being myself in. And that's just something that I didn't realize existed at all.
Well, I think that social media does get a bad rap in terms of being this evil thing, when in fact, if you know how to use it,
yes,
it's really especially during the pandemic.
We also connected
through
social media as well. I remember when you were going down the path of, and I it's like not music therapy, but it is, but it isn't. But
it is and it isn't, yeah.
Yes. Okay, like, so whatever path you were going, I was so excited to hear that you were doing that. And I remember you were raising money to like, you know, and I wanted to help because it was like, wow, like this is so cool. Like this is part of why I wanted to be around orchestral musicians, because I love people who are doing interesting things that are like, I wouldn't say your side hustle, but like, I guess that's what it is. But who are also moved by like this inner calling.
It is an inner calling, because part of the reason why I wanted to create this podcast is there are so many musicians that are feeling lost. That, you know, it's like an existential midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. Is this all there is? And it's like, well, yes, in this profession, this is all there is. And whatever it is that you want to do, you've got to do something about it. You can either find it within your profession or you start your own
branching out.
And sometimes the institution forces you to have to make that choice. And that's okay, because I think you learn from what you can from those institutions, and you decide not to repeat it or take what works and sort of understand why it didn't work for you, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So,
definitely. Yeah. I never saw being an orchestral player just the end game, but I knew that I would have a good baseline education And even that is still, that's still Western focused. But early on, I was like, this is going to allow me to intersect with other ways of being. Yeah. And even though it's been a struggle, it's true. Like, to see from the, to hear music, to experience music, to write music, to the, from that lens is, you know, just like any other tool. It's just something that I've developed. And,
yeah.
And you as well. So
we try.
and our co-founder, Steph, is way on that path earlier than I have been. And so I love watching their journey, you know, obviously through socials.
Yeah.
And connecting with them in real time as well. As they grew up in Orlando and was part of the Boys and Girls Club from an early age and you know, did the whole marching band thing, like studying and everything, playing drum set or whatever. But then also having the opportunity to like focus on just marimba playing.
Yeah.
And so many people for so long still think it's a waste of time. But that's because the infrastructure on the other side of what like modern marimba and all the other people who are doing this hadn't been built until now.
Yeah.
You see all these young people doing their own thing.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the projects or new developments happening for Modern Marimba.
Sure. Yeah. I just found out yesterday that Modern Marimba received a grant from the Arts and Cultural Alliance of Sarasota County.
Yay.
To record some of the commissions that we sponsored throughout the pandemic.
Yeah.
So having had the opportunity to go in and do that is a privilege, huge privilege, and we'll be able to, you know, make some videos for our YouTube channel, just make some make some content.
Yeah.
But also like kind of celebrate all the work that we've done over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. I'm collaborating with Elizabeth Baker, a new Renaissance artist who is based in St. Pete, but right now she's in Switzerland at a residency. So when she comes back, we'll be doing a concert at the Palladium in St. Pete. Yeah, we're collaborating with a bunch of local groups. I think we're doing one of the SIL lectures with Joe Holt.
Great.
Yes. And then also I'll be collaborating with Melanie Lavender, who's a spoken word artist in Sarasota.
Yes, I saw the feature on WED.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's great. And I met her through the park.
Right.
Because of you, I was connected with Valerie Bouchon.
Right.
And so we have a partnership with the Newtown Farmers Market, and we usually produce one or two concerts in the park, and they have a great pavilion. It had some damage from Hurricane Ian, so right now it's closed, and they're trimming trees and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But so she's just been great and very welcoming, and they're so open to like all the experiments that I want to do. That, you know, either fold or don't fold, but it's all been a learning experience.
Yeah.
And that type of community, like I'm very thankful to Newtown for opening up their doors to us and letting us like just see what happens.
Yes.
You know, because I think the real estate for arts in Sarasota, it's tough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To find spaces.
Yes.
Because they're already made for a certain way, and it's like, oh well, okay, well, are we gonna be safe here? That's something that I've had to think of as a musician and an arts administrator.
Yeah.
Like, what does it really mean to have a safe space?
Yeah.
What does it mean to be accessible?
Yeah.
Is my art even accessible?
Well, you really don't find that until
you do it.
Yeah, you do it. And that's the scary part. That's where you don't want to lose the faith in what you're doing. Because, you know, if you don't try, it will fail if you don't try.
Yeah.
So
those are the types of things that we have. And I, you know, we didn't announce like a season or anything.
Yeah,
but we
do
have some things coming up. And I actually love the flexibility. It's very like, it's very me as well. Because as a freelancer, you never know what's going to come up. And, you know, you just leave yourself, you're open to those experiences.
Right. Well, I think the experience of the freelancer maybe puts you in a better mental state than, say, a salaried person such as myself is with the unpredictability.
Yeah.
That's something that your feet are already acclimated to that kind of, and for me, it's the sea leg issue.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the non-attachment to people, gigs, experiences.
Exactly.
It's just like, it happened.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen again, okay.
That's okay. we're not, you know, us salaried people are not okay with that.
And I think with the educational program, that's something I'm trying to get used to, because I was used to having a lesson every other week or every week, playing in studio class. And some people need that structure. But then a lot of people, it's like you have maybe three or four sessions with, you know, a young person, and they go into this space and they really like it. But then life happens.
Yes.
And like, not having attachments to be like, oh, I lost a student. Yeah. You know, it's just, we made the best of that time. And, you know, you impart whatever, and they're going to remember it, especially if they're, you know, the golden age, you know.
Yeah.
Stability is not something, it's a luxury.
Yeah, exactly.
For most of the world.
And I think that's something that we have to keep in mind, and I think accept, because with our mindset training, everything is about stability, regularity, and it's just like, it's not...
And growing all the time. It's like the sun will never disappear.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think that's... So being flexible and learning that your story is not the same as somebody else's, and just being sensitive to that. And you've mentioned that several times, that, you know, you learn, rather than feeling like you're imparting some great wisdom, they're giving you a wisdom that you just... had no clue.
Yes. About. And that's the, what is it? It's the savior complex.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I do it all the time. And it's like, oh, okay, just chill.
Well, okay. That's more good advice. Just chill. Take a step back. Just chill. Okay.
So I really feel like Modern Roomba has been an education for me. Yeah, oh yeah. More than you know, than feeling like I have something to give to people. And I do. I know. I realize I have something to offer to folks, and making those pathways, those doors open, and stuff like that. But it's really about, like, I realize I'm learning and growing, and the same grace that I give myself, I definitely want to, you know, impart to others, and the same grace my teachers gave me. You know, it's a continuous cycle.
I think that's a great idea, because we come back to that kitchen scene with you and your mom. Your mom is exchanging, you know, dishes for your lessons. And I think that's an image or a metaphor I like to keep in my mind, that that's what we do. We keep the kitchen doors open.
Keep them open, for sure.
Yeah. That, you know, your mom's making a great dish that she offers, and in exchange...
Right.
Yeah.
And I could do the same way in music.
Exactly.
And with food, too. Food is something, oh my God, I love food. And it every time I try to equate music and food, it's just like, oh, this is a match made in heaven.
Oh. Now, there is what I like to call a come to Jesus moment, where we have to take a step back and do some honest evaluation, and, to use your words, measure success. What is that process for you, and what advice can you share on that?
Well, we have a commitment, and we said that we are going to leave Modern Roomba open for 5 years, starting in, I think, the 2021-22 season, and we are going to measure ourselves financially and also through community input, and, like, we renew our contract with the community at the end of this 5 years. So we leave it up to the community as to whether we should keep doing this. Is this a need? Is this a want? And after that, I think maybe renew it for another 5 years. And
I think that's actually quite amazing that your board of directors is the community. And I think that's the way to do it.
It really is. Yeah. Because, like, so many people try to drag this out and blah, 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 blah. And if it takes a break for 5 years, and then it's like, oh, we need to bring it back. We really miss it. Okay, let's do it again. You know, there's nothing wrong with,
like, exactly, because it's still, you know, as far as the IRS is concerned, you're still there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then in terms of, like, measuring, like, how do we attract ticket buyers or whatever, I really like the model of the sliding scale, and it's something that we haven't explicitly done in our concerts. Most of them have been free.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, if we work with, you know, we work with West Coast Black Theater, mm-hmm. having a concert there, and it was like, well, this is kind of what we need to charge. And it's like, okay, so we have some concerts that are
free
and, but I would really love to explore the sliding scale and see more of the people around me doing that. I think that will help our community kind of reunited.
You do that in with the conservatory as well for the students, mm-hmm. that you have a sliding scale.
Yeah.
And I know the art therapist that I work with, he has a sliding scale as well. Mm-hmm. So because I mean, people definitely, there's a need and people shouldn't be deprived of that.
Yeah. So I wonder since the arts organizations in Sarasota had a coronavirus policy, let's have a sliding scale policy.
Yeah.
That's citywide,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Let's see that. So it's a challenge to those who are listening.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Mission Artist. Our guest today was Tita Vonkoff, co-founder of Modern Marimba. If you'd like to learn more about Modern Marimba and support future projects, you can log on at www.modernmarimba.org and sign up for their newsletter. You can also find links to their site and the WEDU short documentary on our webpage, www.missionartist.org.